Thank you. So it is June 23rd, 2021. It is 6:01, and my name is Mayor Julia Johnson, and I am calling the City of Woolley Council meeting to order. If you will all please stand with me so we can say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you for those who stood for the flag salute. Okay, we'll begin with roll call, and I'm going to go in order of the wards, and I'll begin with Ward 1, Councilman Brendan McGoffin. Okay. Councilwoman Joellen Kesty.
Present.
Thank you. Councilwoman Sarah Diamond.
Present.
Thank you. Councilmember Glenn Allen.
Present.
Thank you. Councilmember Chuck Owen.
Here.
Councilmember Carl DeYoung.
Here.
And Councilman at Large, Kevin Loy.
Here.
All right, thank you. So I am looking for an approval of the agenda.
Madam Mayor, I move to approve the agenda.
Thank you.
Councilman, 1 second.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Councilwoman Kesty and seconded by Councilman Owen. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay, moving on to the consent agenda, items 1 through 5. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Thank you.
Councilman Owen, I second.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Councilman Loy, seconded by Councilman Owen. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay, motion carries. So I am excited tonight. We have a special guest. We have Audria Wolf from Family Promise who is going to do a presentation for us. And I think, Audria, are you ready or?
Yeah, sure. I do have a PowerPoint I could put up. How much time do I have?
10 to 15 minutes, if that works for you.
Oh, that's way more than expected. Okay, then I can do the whole PowerPoint. Do I have access to share my screen or?
So that will be Bill.
Oh, I do see it. Hang on. Can you guys see that?
Yes.
It looks okay, great.
Okay. How do I make it go from here? Because I don't have full function. Here we go. Found it. All right. So I'm Audria. I'm the Executive Director of Family Promise of Skagit. I'm going to give you a little presentation on how we started, what we do here, and a little bit of our history and our national affiliation. For those of you who don't know, we are based in Cedar Woolley, and our services focus on serving homeless families with children. And over this last year, we've expanded that to also diversion and prevention with case management. So we'll get a little bit more into what that's all about. I added some of these kind of fun facts on here because I always find it interesting when I hear from leaders in our community that they had no idea that homelessness for children was such a big issue. So I just wanted to get some of these facts out here, how pervasive it really is for our children when they don't have a stable place to live, don't have a place where they can study every single night, and don't just have a place where they can just relax and feel, you know, at home. We start to look at a huge rise in depression, suicide, fall back in grades, and it really affects generationally out into our community. So hang on, I'm gonna close my window. Zoom meetings, extra interference. So I have this short little video that I like to play, and this is just the introduction of how Family Promise nationally got started. So let me know if it doesn't work and I'll shut it right off. Sometimes this goes well in Zoom and sometimes it doesn't. Not.
I don't think we're seeing it. Oh, should we be seeing something?
Yes. Andrea? Yes. Okay, let me see. Well, we can pass on that because that's just a little extra. Those are always hard to make work in Zoom. Anyway, so Karen Olson was a member of the New Jersey state, and she knew nothing about homelessness. And she came across a gal named Millie on the side of the street, and on her way to her corporate job, she decided to stop and take a minute to get to hear Millie's story, which led to an outreach in her community to see how homelessness was getting dealt with. And she was so extremely shocked to find out that many of the youth in her community were homeless were in foster care merely because they didn't have housing. So she started to learn more and more about how these issues begin to stem out and cause breaks in families and so on and so forth. So our big ploy over COVID has been everyone can be the Karen Olson of their community. Everyone has the opportunity to get to know someone and realize that they're just like their neighbors, right? They're just somebody who needs a little help, a little mentorship, and we all have the power to create this huge change in our community. And because Karen chose to make that one stop and then reach into her community, we now have 200 plus affiliates across the nation that are doing this in quite a few of our states. You can kind of see that up in the corner here. A lot of it is based on the East Coast in New Jersey, but we're starting to spread more and more over here. We actually have, I think our fifth affiliate just started in Washington State. So Family Promise's mission is to come together as a community and serve homeless families as they provide loving homes. Our kind of motto around here is we're ending homelessness one family at a time. We started with our IHN shelter and have grown exponentially. And I'm going to skip through that because I'll tell you that later. So our baseline programming that most people know us for is our shelter program. We have a rotational program that got shut down due to COVID. Our day center is at Bethlehem Lutheran. And from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., guests reside in churches outside of our day center prior to COVID. and so what that looks like is 12 to 13 host sites, 12 to 13 support sites. Transportation from our day center leaves at in the evening time at 5 p.m. to get them to the church by 6 p.m. They're served a meal. There's an evening activity and an overnight host. As the years have gone on since 2015, we've begun adding other organizations. Mount Vernon City is a support site. We have some school districts that come in and help doing evening activities sometimes. And it's a really great way to bring multiple groups together, not just churches. Each center has 20 to 50 volunteers, which seems like a lot, but then you kind of span out and we actually have 600 plus volunteers. So that's a really big number. What's nice about this is us as a program, we're only supporting the 20 volunteers. Well, they then go out and support 20 more volunteers. So it kind of creates this really great tier out program that offers a lot of education out into our community about how we can all be involved in homelessness and how we can serve people at all different levels. We have our day center, which is where the guests come during the daytime. They have access to computers. We have a tutor room, showers, laundry facilities. They can meet with their case manager any day of the week. We're one of the only agencies that has services 7 days a week, both in-house and for new intakes. Our case managers, along with family mentors, do workshops for budgeting. We do sustainable living. We work with just about any kind of programming that you can think of that a guest may need, from learning how to sew to learning how to care for chickens. We've taught how to do vegetables, put them in the dirt, get them on the plate. So we kind of, whatever our guests need, and each are very individual on what's going to help them make the budget. So those change every year, but we try to have our financial literacy is always our baseline. We do that 4 times a year, and then we kind of spread out from there. Wrong way. So this is just talking about how we have a lot of community resources. Our main ways for people to get to us is through other community agencies. We have an extremely strong partnership with our school districts. We're partnered nationally with McKinney-Vento. We work a lot with our churches. We have our landlord relationships. So we take intakes from everywhere. If somebody searches us up on our webpage, they can do an intake or a request for services straight from our webpage. So we're very accessible to our clients. The nice thing about being part of a national affiliate that some people kind of like cringe a little bit when they hear that word is we're actually not very corporate-y. Each individual affiliate looks extremely different. We do try to keep a lot of the key components of our national values, like hospitality, innovation, empowerment, empathy, but we tailor to the individual needs of a community. So no affiliate is going to look the same, but we still get a diverse amount of resources from all of our affiliates. If I have a problem here at the agency or a new programming, I can call upon 200 other directors to say, hey, has this ever happened to your agency? So it really cuts out a lot of time in trying to find answers for things, which also makes it very easy for us to bring new innovative ideas all the way from the East Coast over to Skagit County and have the support we need from multiple communities on how to make it work here. So I always like to talk about homelessness is not always answered by just finding shelter, right? We can put people in shelter, we can move them into permanent housing, but that's only a band-aid to the issue, right? So some of our families really haven't had any financial literacy courses. They didn't learn how to budget as kids, and they definitely don't know how to teach their kids. Health and wellness is the least of their priorities because they're just trying to survive day to day when they're living in a car, right? And family mentoring is a huge component because it takes multiple mentors in a child's life to really make a difference, right? So all these different multiple components that you see here are different things that we work on to kind of look at what is the individual need that each family has. Which leads me to our robust services that we have grown into over the last 6 years now. Mm-hmm. I always want to say 5, but it's now been 6. We lost one during COVID. We have these 3 pillars of services: prevention, shelter, and hospitality, or stabilization, sorry. And prevention starts out with our rental assistance program, helping people maintain their housing so we reduce our incoming homeless numbers. A lot of times people just need help with one bill being paid or one rental assistance, you know, and they're back on their feet. Shelter diversion looks a little bit more like maybe families doubled up somewhere, the landlord's about to evict them, but maybe we could come in and we could mediate, divert them from ever having to enter the shelter, less trauma to the children, but also rehouse them during that time period. It's a bit of a program and a practice, I guess. It's the way we get to know our guests, even though they're not in our shelter. This has become a very growing, innovative kind of way of serving through COVID when we couldn't have guests come to the building. It's become a new kind of nationwide practice as well for emerging programs that maybe don't have the building resources like we do to serve people in housing. They could start to reduce homelessness by serving them right where they're at. And then, of course, we do our outreach program, gas cards, bus tickets, all those kind of different things. We work with charity cars. In fact, tomorrow we'll be gifting two cars to two families who have worked very, very hard to get their licenses, pay off their debts, and do everything they need to do. So those are some kind of fun prevention things we get to do. And then shelter, I kind of think, speaks for itself. We have three stages of sheltering, though, which is kind of unique to most of the programs you see. We use the first stage is our shelter, obviously, and they are in crisis. They just need one-on-one, maybe two, three times a week to get their basic needs met, get them rolling into job searches, get them daycare, which is a huge thing in Skagit County right now, finding appropriate daycare. And kind of weeding through maybe some co-parenting issues. Do they need court documents, things like that. And once they've stabilized, we can start to look at moving them from our church rotation up into our four families to one household, where they start to pay a little bit of program fees. They're more stabilized. They probably only need maybe once or twice a month case management. And then we start adding in all these classes like financial literacy, and they have more time for that, and family mentors, people that walk alongside them. And then we have our third stage housing, which is one family per household. These are families that are probably finishing up a degree, maybe working on a new trade or something that's gonna maybe like pay off the rest of their debt so that they can own their own home, something that's gonna get them to that permanent, long-term successful housing. And also flourish in our community a little bit better without the risk of returning back to homelessness. And stabilization can encompass a lot of things. So we're not gonna get into that. It's kind of stabilization kind of rolls underneath everything. And we kind of went over this. This is for a different kind of presentation. We'll skip to that. So some of our local outcomes and impacts have really been changed since COVID. Our national average is 8 weeks. When I started here in 2017, we were beginning to grow way beyond that because of our housing crisis. That is why we began adding transitional housing. Right before COVID, we had worked very hard at getting our average length of stay in our shelter to be about 35 days. That's about 5 weeks. We have an 86% exit to stable housing, which is about 6% higher than the national average. And that's due to our piloted staging of housing. When we move them up, we're able to catch some things that other affiliates might not be able to before they fall back into homelessness. So really preparing them a little bit better for what's to come. 175 families have been served in our shelter since 2015, and 58% of those are children. That's really huge. That's changed a lot. We've doubled our capacity in shelter during COVID. We've doubled our capacity in transitional housing. So I hate to say it, but I think COVID was kind of nice to us in some ways. and this is the part that kind of makes us unique as well. Our average cost to serve a family with wraparound services, not just plug them into a house, is $8,000 to $10,000. That has gone up some during COVID because we did some county funded hotel rooms. That number is usually a little bit lower, but that's like a third of the cost for a state run program that just puts them in housing. So we have every dollar donated, we turn into three. We're huge on the in-kind donations here. And the way we do services is a lifelong change. We believe very strongly in deep, impactful relationships with our guests. So at times we've stopped our growing just to make sure that we're still keeping that kind of grassroots, deep, impactful relationship kind of momentum going, and making sure that we're educating the community around us as we're doing. So, and this prevention number, $260 to serve a family or a child from becoming homeless is huge. That's a very small number to keep a child safe. So, obviously, we have some big goals. We made some big things happen during COVID, and we hope to keep that momentum going. We're working on a county grant right now that will allow us to add a diversion office out in Concrete. We're looking at turning in one of our transitional houses in Mount Vernon into a stage two housing. But we really want to also begin to focus on our presence here in Cedar Woolley, maybe do more outreach, outreach in the park, kids programming, where families have the opportunity to be there with their kids. And maybe we have our case managers present and they can kind of nonchalant let us know that they need some services, or maybe we have a presence inside the school. So we're kind of working on what that will look like in the next year. And due to our extreme amount of growth, we are like stacked like sardines sometimes in our office space. So we are definitely in the time to start looking to expand into some new offices. My only problem is I won't open another office unless it also includes housing. So I'm a little picky in that way. So these are just kind of some of our big things that we like to share. We're all about empowering families. One of our national missions is to create independence in families. We're not here to keep this cycle going. If our guests aren't willing to work on goals and they're not ready to move forward, they're probably not meant for our programming. We're more of a hands up. We're family around here. We want to see our family members, you know, get up on their feet. So we build communities and solutions. We like to partner with agencies, not create new programming unless it's needed. There's a lot of wonderful programming in Skagit County already. So it's a big one of our goals to continue partnering together and keep reaching out into our community. And then we offer home. That's like our value for the year that we've been talking about, is making sure that we're always offering a place that kids can call home. You know what it's like to go home to your house and feel like I'm home. Well, we want our kids here in this program to feel the same way. So I know that was a lot of information in a short amount of time. And I will definitely send you guys the slideshow too, so that that way you have my contact information. But I'd love to open it up for questions, if that's okay, Julia. If anybody wants to ask any questions or whatever.
I've got a question for you. What percentage of your financing is government provided, and what is donated?
Yeah, so actually up until COVID, we had not taken any government funding. The ratio is extremely low. I think we took $135,000. I'd have to look at the percentage, but it's low. It's below 10%. And that was just during COVID. It's only been COVID funding. I am looking at my very first county grant or county contract. We're in the second stages of that. So as you can see, I have somebody else on here with me, Brandon. He's my new funds developer. So that's why we felt comfortable doing that. Family Promise nationally can go both ways. We tend to really wait to get into government funding for the simple fact that it does create a lot of red tape. And we want to serve the kiddos where they're at right now without having to jump through a bunch of hoops to do that. So the majority of our funding does come from individual donors.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
Hi, neighbor.
Hello, Carl.
Hey. You mentioned other groups in the county. So I'm just trying to kind of drill down a little more on how you're different from other nonprofits here in the county, because there's many services out there. And how do you guys fill in what's not there, and how are you guys just different? Thank you.
Thank you for asking that, because I didn't include that in my presentation. That's great, Carl. So yes, there are a lot of other family services in Skagit County. One of the things that makes us unique is we keep families together. So in a lot of other services, dads have to be separated from their kiddos. Or sometimes they can't be in the same programming. So here we take families as they are, how they were when they became homeless. That might mean older sister and aunt. It might look like grandparents that are adopting. That might be two females, two males. That it could be whatever. Single dads, single moms. You know, we've done pretty much all of the above. So that's one way that makes us unique. We also don't necessarily have timelines like most agencies. Now, that's not to say that we're not getting people through just as quickly, if not quicker. There seems to be a little bit of a reduce in stress for families when you tell them, I don't have a timeline for you. But we are goal-oriented. So I say you have 30 days to be prepared to move up to our next stage. If you can't make that 30 days, then we need to really work on an individualized plan to get you there. So this helps us all kind of stay accountable to making sure our families are getting all the support that they need. And I think another, well, actually there's two more. The other thing that makes us different is our involvement with the churches. So our church volunteers bring a huge level of resources and our outside agencies. Because they're serving the guests in the evening, they're getting loved on. You know, we get to serve them as case managers, but then they go to the church and it's like they're at grandma and grandpa's house, right? And then they send them home all sugared up, right? So we got people out there that are bringing us resources all the time. And for us as an agency, it also brings us a diverse amount of skills that we can utilize, which keeps our model low cost. So that was the other thing I was gonna say. Because of our diversity, we're also an extremely low cost model. Those numbers have gone up because we have, we're fully a static site, which means we're not rotating anymore. But we've done our best to still kind of maintain that low ratio of spending, you know, while still serving our guests well.
Are there any other questions? I actually have one, Audra, and that is, how do you differ from the Anacortes Family Center, which is transitional housing?
Well, we are quite similar in some ways, but we're on the other opposite side of the county, right? We're here locally in Cedar Woolley, and we do share a lot of services back and forth, but we are quite similar. And we often use each other as resources and kind of client swap. So the only thing that's really different for us, and this is what we would like to grow into, is that we don't own any of our own buildings currently. So at the very moment, we're still young in our years, right? So whatever we're doing in programming, we have to replicate. So if I'm telling my guests they need to live sustainably, then we're living sustainably. So we haven't kind of jumped up that rung yet, but that's in our plan for this year. So figuring out what's the next right step. And that's kind of another reason why I'm here with you guys, because I would like to hear from you guys, and it doesn't have to be today, feel free to email me. What do you see as needs in our community for housing and for our youth programming? What are some things as we begin to look at growing and building our building capacity? What do we need and what would you like to see? I think it's really important for you guys as the leaders to have some way in before we just keep moving forward. And that's why I always contact you before I do things, Julia.
So I have to say, you know, you are a group that has a huge impact here, but isn't really that well known. And so I greatly appreciate the fact that you were willing to come tonight, that you were willing to share your program, talk about what you're doing. And it's incredible when you think about how quickly you grew and how well you have developed your program in such a short period of time, because Family Promise hasn't been around really all that long. Mm-hmm. So great job. Absolutely great job.
Yeah. We currently have two shelters. We're serving 8 preventional guests with case management now. We have 5 transitional houses, and we are serving our first official, like, formalized diversion cases right now.
Wow. And that's all within the last year. Is that correct? That you have grown?
Let's see. In 2018, we had the prevention program serving 2 to 3 families and a rotating shelter with 4 families and 1 transitional house. I think we're serving like 27 families at a time now through our housing and another 8 to 16 through outreach programs.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's really great. Very glad you're in the community. Very glad that you're here serving those who are in need. And I'm really curious as to how things are going to look when the eviction, the rent mm-hmm. eviction, that's going to be a story in itself, I'm sure. So
yeah. So think of us when that comes up, that we're gearing up for that. I mean, I just really don't know what's going to happen, but I'd love to partner more with the city on how we handle that, especially local in our city, because we are the only housing agency in our city. And how are we serving our neighbors right now? And of course I serve all the cities, but I would like to have a little bit more roots here because this is where our home is, right?
Right. Okay, are there any other questions for Audra? Okay, hearing none. Again, thank you so much. Thank you for coming in and sharing your information. You have a great program. Love it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Brandon. So I just for the record want to state that Councilman Brendan McGoffin actually showed up just shortly after I called the meeting to order. So I'd like to acknowledge him and make sure that he gets on the record for being here. And I also want to state that the impact model, the impact presentation that was scheduled to happen tonight, got called away. I think they're investigating something else. So they were unable to be here, but we will have them back. So they have a great program, and I know that you will love it. Okay, moving on, we're going to move to staff reports, and I'm going to start this with our new fire chief, Frank Wagner.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. I have a few things on my list here this evening. First of all, COVID numbers are continuing to go down, which is an amazing thing, and as the state looks to open up here next week, we've only had 7 new cases in an entire week. So kudos to everybody and the county and the state on that. We're also coming up on some pretty extreme weather conditions with the looks at 100+ forecast this weekend, depending on which agency you use. I think AccuWeather is the highest at 110, I think, on Sunday. So with that, just a reminder to take care of the small animals and children and the elderly that we forget to hydrate and keep out of the conditions, because heat exhaustion and heat stroke can be a big issue for us in these kind of conditions, as well as life jackets around water. And we're seeing a lot of near or drownings around the state because of the water is still really, really cold, and people don't realize it until they jump all the way in and it's too late. So also with these conditions, we have a burn ban that's coming up for the entire county that'll start this Friday at 2 p.m. Not a lot of changes for the city, as we're in a burn ban all the time and have been for years. The county will start the same regulations that we have been observing within the city limits going forward from Friday at 2 p.m. until otherwise noted. And then Assistant Chief Jerry Gardner has been on board now for his first full week. And kudos to Assistant Chief Olson, who has been with us for 28 years, and I'd like to congratulate him on his upcoming retirement. And just goes to show the dedication that he has for the city and the community as he's passing the torch and training Mr. Gardner all the way up until the very last day, and passing on that knowledge and expertise for all of us. And Chief Olson has been instrumental in a lot of things, and training has kind of been his the feather in his cap over the years, as you can see with the training site that we have down there on 3rd Street, and how amazing that has progressed over his tenure, with him also planning and training classes even after he's gone that are on the books through the end of the year, with the big Burlington Northern tanker car that he was able to bring in with the help of some of our local and state government agencies. And Burlington Northern is going to come in and teach a big class this year. And he, I think it's going to be hard for him not to be a part of it, because I keep hearing him say he's going to be here. So thanks again to Todd for 28 years of friendship and amazing service to the community and the citizens. And Todd is on here, and I would like to say we're going to miss you, buddy. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, so I'd like to give Todd an opportunity here to talk, if you'd like to.
Sure. Yes, it's been a real pleasure and honor working for the city and serving, and the staff has been outstanding, and the transition's new staff has been really top-notch, too. I have great confidence in them to that they'll carry on and do very well for the department. But it's been a great 28 years with the city and 30 years in the fire service. It's been really great. I look forward to spending time with my grandkids and kids and traveling and having fun. So thank you, Mayor.
So, well, Todd, thank you. And I actually had the opportunity and the pleasure to present to Todd for, on behalf of the city and the council, a plaque. The Volunteer Fire Department had a wonderful dinner for him, and there were some great speeches that were given. And so I had a chance to attend that and present the plaque. So Todd, if you'll allow me, I'll read what we had put on the plaque and that you have, and that is Assistant Chief Todd Olson, City of Sejorouli Fire Department 55, January 16th, 99 through January 30th, 21. And it says, in recognition of the years of outstanding leadership, dedication, service, and safety training that you have provided to those who have worked and volunteered within our Sejorouli Fire Department. On behalf of the citizens of Sejorouli and myself, we extend our appreciation and respect, Mayor Julia Johnson. And so, Todd, we thank you for all the years that you have provided the training, your dedication to the department and to the city. You know, you've promoted safety, which is absolutely huge. We have an outstanding department in part because of the training that you provided. So really with a grateful heart, I extend the city's thanks, and we wish you the very best as you move forward in your retirement, you and Judy. You have a lovely wife, by the way. I'm glad I had a chance to meet her. And as you float back and forth, I think you're going to be snowbirds, are you not?
That is the plan, yes.
Yeah, we're all envious of that. But anyway, it's well deserved. And thank you very much, Todd. And thank you for coming on tonight so that we could have a chance to honor you once again. It's well deserved.
Thank you.
You are well deserved. You're welcome. Okay, moving on with staff reports, I'll move to Chief Lynn Tucker.
All right, thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Just a couple things here. You see in a packet, at the very end of the packet, the last four or five pages is my input on some of the legislative things that we've been experiencing. If you have any questions, you can ask now or shoot me an email and I can answer them. I pretty much put some of my comments in red based on the discussions it's been having on a more of a state level with the Chiefs and Sheriff's Association and the back and forth. This has gotten a lot of traction right now. I got to get interviewed by King 5, and it was on last night. They were kind of looking at how the effects of some of these legislative things that have come down have affected local agencies. So thought it was really well done by them. They were really fair with us, and gave me a perfect chance to get my message out. On a little bit more closer to home front, we are gearing up for the 4th of July, kind of. We're not sure what kind of parade we're going to have, but we're going to be prepped for whatever kind of parade shows up. We also have the Rotary Foot Race going on at the same time. So really, we're gearing up to cover the streets and provide safety for the runners doing the foot race. And then for, like I said, whatever parade shows up, we had a brief parade last year, and we did exactly the same thing. We're going to provide safety and security for that parade if it happens. On Saturday, this Saturday, there's going to be a poker run that is going to show up at the Habitat for Humanity houses. Some motorcyclists are going to be showing up. I talked to Jen, who is coordinating that for Habitat. And we're going to be closing off part of one lane of traffic. So if you're in the area, you see some cones on the road. It should only be from about 10 to 2 in my day shift. If they don't melt this weekend, they're going to be out there checking traffic. And I wanted to mention that Chief Baldwin called me. He's the chief that runs the impact team at the sheriff's office. When the mayor mentioned that they couldn't make it tonight, he called in the profusely apologized for not being able to make it tonight. They love getting their message out. but they just had a priority investigation that they were working on. I didn't want to know any of the gory details, so they left it at that. And, you know, like Brenda was always fond of Bigfoot sightings and all that. Actually, there was a Dean Klinger sighting this week. He's back on this side of the mountains, and he actually wandered in the back of the fire hall. So if you hear rumors of that, it's true. I saw it with my own eyes, and I think Frank even had breakfast with him. But yeah, he's still around, and I think he seems to be enjoying himself. I don't know what the deal is with that. But Mayor, that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And just so the council knows, I actually sent out to you via email information. It's an article that deals with the law and what Chief Tucker is actually talking about. And Chief, I don't know if you received the video. I sent the video of King 5, and I also forwarded it to Paul, in case you guys want to put it on your Facebook. So it, okay. It was well done. It was very well done.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, the chief brought up 4th of July. I just want to remind everybody so that if you're asked, you know, we are going to have events. The Logger Rodeo Board worked within a very short period of time, and we're able to manage the recruitment of wood carvers. So we are going to have the wood carving contest and the carvings and the auctions that go along with that. So you don't want to miss out on that. There will be the beard contest. Also, we're going to have the fireworks. So the fireworks, of course, are very important, and that will be happening this year. And also want to extend a thanks to the Rotary for putting on the Great American Foot Race, which is which they're doing with COVID rules, you might say. So keeping everybody safe. So if you haven't had a chance to sign up for that, maybe you'd like to. All right, we will move on, and I will turn it over to Director of Building and Permits, John Coleman.
Good evening, Council, Mayor. I don't have a lot to report. The Planning Commission, there was a couple of members that were unable to attend last week, so we were unable to have a Planning Commission meeting last week, unfortunately. We'll do it again in July. And then everything's going along just fine in the planning and building department, where the application period for the assistant planner position is closed, and we'll be doing some interviews in the upcoming weeks, and we'll keep you posted on that. That's all I have, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, John. All right, Director of Public Works, Mark Freiberger.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, City Council members. Just a few things to report on tonight. You awarded the 2021 pavement and pedestrian program with the consent calendar tonight. That's an overlay for Wicker Road in the city limits, as well as Eastern from State to Ferry, and some ADA improvements at various locations. That we expect that work will start in July and take about 35 days to finish. In addition to that, the pounding is over with over at the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Crossing, undercrossing. The piles were completed on the 21st. That went pretty well. The BNSF crews were able to work around the track schedule. Because of that, it took a while to do it. They were driving 1 to 2 piles a day, and that 16 total have been installed. Now, the next part of finishing that particular agreement with BNSF is for them to deliver the bridge decks and the pile and abutments structures for storage until we have the funds to build the actual undercrossing sometime in the next few years. So that all went pretty well, other than the first couple of days when folks were startled by the noise. It really, the complaints were relatively minor on that. Our public works operations crews have been busy up at the Fire Station 2 site getting ready for the storage buildings. They've completed the grading and a retaining wall there, and we close bids tomorrow on the building itself, and that should go in this summer as well. We have another project that has bid and been awarded, and we're waiting for the construction to do a slurry seal, which is an asphalt coating on some of our streets. We're doing F&S grade road from Highway 20 to Morrow, and also on Orth Way, which was a street we chip sealed a couple of years ago, and I've had quite a few complaints on because of the roughness of the surface in that residential neighborhood. So that's being addressed. In addition to that, I want to make you aware that coming your way are a couple of things for your approval. Our wastewater treatment plant laboratory operations building and the public works building. We're getting very close to completion of design on that. I'll have on the council agenda for the 14th a review of the proposed funding for that project and request your authorization to go to advertisement for that project. The overall budget's about $6.2 million for that, pretty good sized project. We're anticipating that if the approval is granted, and we'll go to add on the 20th and close bids on August the 12th and should start construction sometime in October. It's about a year project, so it would complete about October of 2022. And in addition to that, we're in the final design review stage for our SR20, SR9 Township Intersection Project. I'll be bringing that to you for your approval to advertise in September. In the meantime, we have to get DOT's approval and obligation of the federal funds, and we are starting that process on August the 1st. That takes about 6 weeks. So that's the reason for the advertisement and the council approval being off in September, but that is coming. And finally, our designers are working on the Olmsted Park project. That one is being designed this year to the final design stage, and we should be ready to advertise for bids on that during the winter and go to construction on that in 2022 for the infrastructure part of that. So David Lee is also working on the final or the design for the Cascade Trail extension from Holt Camp to Hodgen Road as well. We're hoping to get that design wrapped up this year and be ready to bid that in 2022. Now, in preparation for a number of projects down the road, I'll be submitting applications for TIB, the TIB program, which we've had great success with. For several projects, which you will see that coming your way sometime in late July for your approval to submit that. And finally, tonight on the agenda is the award request for the Skagit County Economic Development Funds. And I'll talk more about that when we get to that in the agenda. That's all I have, Mayor. Thank you.
I always chuckle because it's a lot. Thank you for all you do, Mark. Okay, moving on to our director of IT, Bill Chambers. Bill, we can't hear you. Well, I'll come back. I will come back to Bill. And moving on to our finance director, Debbie Burton. Or is she out tonight? Is she out tonight, Doug?
She is out tonight.
Do you want to provide a report, or are we just passing that by tonight?
We'll go ahead and pass that by. I have a couple of finance comments on mine. I'll just cover them then.
Sounds good. Okay. City Attorney, Nikki Thompson.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I've been working on some pretty significant agreements with third parties lately, and then also some pretty large ordinances. Beyond that, I don't think I have anything of interest to the group.
All right. Thank you, Nikki. And I will go to our City Supervisor, Doug Merriman, and then I will come back to Bill. So.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Several things, really quick ones to let you know about on what we've been up to this week. You know, Nikki signs off and says not much going on, but I do my best to keep her as busy as possible, and she returns a favor to me as well. So it's a good relationship.
So some of the things we have, as Mark mentioned, we talked about the Public Works Operations Facility. I did put in a notice of intent and a credit application with the State Treasurer's Office this week. We have some timelines to meet with that to get the financing package pulled together. The local program is a program with the State Treasurer's Office where you can purchase municipal equipment or you can do real estate and buildings as well. So the rate for that probably runs around 3.25%, somewhere in that range right now. So at least applying, the benefit to applying with them is the State Treasurer's Office will pool together loan requests from a number of cities. They go out and do a bond issue, and then all of us share in that one-time bond issue cost instead of all of us paying costs. So it's actually less expensive administratively to do that. So they'll be sending us their wish list of additional documents that we need to send them. And we're hoping to get that part wrapped up. We have to have a signed contract to them by September 30th. So Mark's contract that, or his schedule that he talked about, that's got even a couple of weeks of extra time if we need it, but we'll have that contract hopefully signed and in by that date. So on the people side of things, we've had in our last labor discussions, it's called our AFSCME union. It's the Association of Federal, State, County, Municipal Employees. We did an extension for 1 year due to COVID, but we did have an opening in there for three different positions to have their salaries reviewed. And we have completed that and negotiated the MOUs with the union. And actually we're routing those for signature today. So we can put a check in the box, that part is complete. And we also will be beginning our labor negotiations for the same union starting on July 13th. So I've been speaking with Joe Downs, the representative from AFSCME, and we're starting to put together our work plan and everything for those negotiations. A little bit more on people. We do have Jill Scott in finance, who's been our finance manager. She has given me written notice that she'll be leaving employment with the city on July 30th. She has some other plans and things that she's doing, and she will definitely be missed. She has been a great part of our department and a help to me and the mayor and really everybody in the city. So we are a little sad to see that letter come in, but she has some good things ahead of her. John already mentioned Catherine in planning. She'll be leaving in July, and John has received applications. I believe we got 7 in. We'll be looking at those and interviewing those candidates. Other things such as land type things, the Reed Street property that we talked about a few months ago, that has been through escrow. We have closed on the property and the city now owns that parcel of property. So we put a permanent file together with all the closing documents. We've got that set and it's now in our parks property inventory. So just to let you know, we have completed that one and a check in that box as well. One other thing, we've got a halfway check in the box, and that is our analysis of the solid waste fund. We've completed all the numeric analysis on that. We've got one more proofread to do, and we'll be able to send that to City Council so you can kind of see some of the things that the numbers, that story that it's telling us. It'll be pretty interesting. So I think that is what I had to present to you tonight. Everybody's been working hard, and I tell you, it's busy around here. And it's a great team. So that's all I have for tonight, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. And moving back to our IT director, Bill Chambers.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, there you are.
Much better. the biggest thing that we've been working on is replacing the failed firewall between us and county. We finally got a Cisco firewall installed there and worked out all the remaining bugs, fine-tuning with the county and with the State Patrol. Big thanks to Glenn and to the folks at County and State Patrol for working on that while I've been out of the office on medical leave and teleworking where I can. Also, I've been doing some more prep for the cemetery management software implementation and the quarterly technology advisory group met last week. Been setting up more technology for new hires and some workstation upgrades where we can get them done. The Ethernet cable infrastructure upgrade at public safety is underway, and we are planning on retiring the old ASP server finally. And now that CADLink is no longer on that. So yeah, progress. And that's it.
All right, thank you, Bill. So we'll move on to council reports. And again, I'll go in order of the ward. So I'll begin with Councilman McGoffin.
Hi, thank you, Madam Mayor. Sorry, I got disconnected at the beginning, but was able to join shortly after. I just wanted to give a special thanks to Todd Olson for his service. We really appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy your retirement. Thank you.
Thank you. And Councilwoman Joellen Kesty.
All right. Okay, I have a few things. Since we were speaking about the 4th of July, the museum will be open and having a sidewalk sale, and CAPS Radio will be there. And there will be old cars and past Logger Rodeo memorabilia. So that'll be something fun going on. And then I wanted to give a huge shout out to the Eagle Scouts. The train, caboose, and deck look amazing. And we will also have scouts helping out at the museum. And it's just really nice to see the youth come out and take part in their community. So great work.
All right. Thank you, Joellen. And moving on to Councilwoman Sarah Diamond.
Good evening. First, I just want to thank Chief Todd Olson. You've done an amazing job there. And I just feel blessed to have personally met you and seen the work that you've done there with all of your firefighters. And I think your retirement is well deserved. And I look forward to seeing Jerry Gardner filling the spots there and the great work that he's going to do there as well. So I think that's all fantastic transition, and it's very exciting for everybody involved. I also want to thank Family Promise for the presentation tonight. I think that was fantastic. I also want to really commend you in the way that you utilize the volunteers that you do and the way that you have been able to function over the years based on private funding and not having to have hands tied with government funding and that sorts of things, because I really do see where that comes into play. My family's personally been involved in providing meals and that sorts of stuff in the community here. And so I've met some people that have been blessed with your program. And so I really do think that you've got a good program there. But I wanted to commend you on that, because I think that's great. I did in some walks to the library recently have been stopped by several residents here and doing my due diligence, passing along their words of wisdom or concern in that. And so one of them is there is quite a bit of concern with putting in the additional residential units there at the Pioneer Market. That seems to not be a very pleasant conversation, so to speak, that has been had. That people are very worried about what that could look like, the amount of high density housing that is going on with the lack of ability to fix some of the streets that have been here for years and years, and the additional traffic and congestion that's going to cause, not just with that specific unit, but other developments that have been going up so quickly. So again, I'm passing along some of this information that has been expressed to me as I simply just walk my children to the library. And just in doing my due diligence, express to them that I would, you know, voice those concerns and let everybody know. And I'm advised that there may be people coming to the council meetings, which I encouraged that they do come in and voice their opinion as they are residents here and they deserve their voices to be heard. So when we do open up, I would expect that there will probably be a handful of people that might come in to express those concerns. And I did encourage them to come in and voice their concerns as residents of our city. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Next we have Councilman Glenn Allen.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll make it a lot quicker. I'm just going to go over kudos to every department in the city. This town is looking so good, running so well, but I am really concerned, when are we going to open up as a functioning council in person? And got to be some sort of date. I'm sorry, I have a date with you, Mayor Julia, in person. When are we going to meet?
So Glenn, you're breaking up, but I think I hear your question. Your question is, and your concern is, you're wondering when we're going to come back together as a council. And it's a great question. And I'm quite ready to do that myself, but we do have some logistics. Part of it has to do with what we need to do, because we have to provide for, there's still regulations in place as far as those who are vaccinated and not vaccinated. It's just my opinion, but I am really hoping that as we move through July, and maybe even through, I don't know, August, I'd love to be back before though August comes. As we move through July, I'm hoping that some of those restrictions are going to be rescinded so that we can come back together and not have to invest in partitions and have to spread ourselves out across the council. But we are going to come back together. And I am also considering the possibility of hybrid situation. So, Glenn, if you want to give me a call on that, I'm glad to have a discussion with you on that.
Madam Mayor, this is just, we were elected by the people, and I think we deserve a little bit more of the state.
Okay. Again, we've lost you.
You probably have to,
Glenn, we've lost you again. You keep
now.
Bear in mind, we're not open yet. We open June 30th. But and City Hall is going to be open. We're going to open right after June 30th. So, in fact, right after the holiday, right after the 4th.
Oh, okay.
So, well, again, if you want to call and have a discussion with me, I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. You bet. Councilman Chuck Owen.
Thank you, Mayor. I only have one concern is the frontage of Rite Aid along Waldron Street. I don't know if you've driven down that street or not, but their grass is about, and weeds, is about 2 feet high. I did bring it to the attention of the code lady, and she had a discussion with them, and they still haven't, I haven't seen any action. And I don't know what she can do, but it seems like after a warning or two, it should be issued a citation or something, because if you'll just drive down there and look, it just looks awful. It's an eyesore for the city. And that's all I have, Mayor, and I thank you.
Yeah, Chuck, thank you for bringing that up. I did, when you made mention of it to me, I did take a drive down there. I know exactly what you're talking about. And our code enforcer, Laura Carr, I'm sure the chief will bring it to her attention so that she's aware that it was brought up at council. Thank you. Thank you, Lynn. And hopefully we'll get some results. So
yeah,
thank you.
They mowed in front of Rite Aid, along Township and Highway 20, but they didn't touch the Waldron Street side. So I went over and had a talk with them, and they said, well, we'll try to get somebody in there in a week. So I have hopes that they will take care of it, but it does look awful.
Yeah, Absolutely. Thank you. Let's see. Councilman Carl DeYoung.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, I would like to echo the sentiments of the rest of the council with Assistant Chief Todd Olson. Your legacy is in all those you've trained, and we are the proud recipients for the assets that you have left, and you do deserve retirement, and we wish you all the best in that and time, well-deserved time with your family. I also would like to give kudos out to Chief Tucker for representing your profession and the city so well on King 5. Thank you for that. And as we know, we're looking at the forecast coming up this weekend, and oh my goodness, three digits. So as Chief Wagner brought out, the air is hot, but the water is cold. So let's be very conscientious of that. And I know we don't have any community buildings opening for cooling centers yet because of COVID, but do look out for our neighbors and those who are maybe having some heat stress, and offer them a cool drink of water and a cool place to be. And that also includes our little furry friends too. Also, I think we'll hear more about it, but Wednesday, June 30th is the last day for the Washoe National Guard at the Helping Hands Food Bank. And I know that we're trying to finalize the route and the timing of that on the 30th, next Wednesday, with a National Guard vehicle caravan. And good to hear that things are going to be moving forward on Wicker Road, especially with the pedestrian access and some of the work on the curbing. So looking forward to that. And then, of course, what we can do for folks who really want to try that out, speeding along after it's nice and smooth. So that's it for Ward 6. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And at large council member, Kevin Loy.
I got a few things, but I'm gonna kind of keep it simple here. The one thing I'm working on is at our retreat when we talked about things for the future. Well, one of them that I brought up was, you know, the youth and the skate park and their annual competition and stuff like that. And I've been working with some people trying to put together like an operations manual, and we've come up with some pretty interesting ideas. And if they come to pass, everybody will be grinning from ear to ear. But hopefully we'll have it ready by this fall, which will be a year before it would happen. So that would be a pretty good deal. We'd have a year to go through it and take a look at it. But what we talked about at the retreat, we're actually going to make happen this time.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin. And then I really only have a couple of things. As I mentioned, as a city, we're going to open on July 6th. And so is the Senior Center. They're going to be opening on July 6th, and they will be open their regular hours with a focus, of course, on their meals. So there will be some activities, but they will be very limited. So thank you, Ellen, for forwarding that so that we had opportunity to share that tonight. Also, I want to congratulate the employees of our fine city here. They are one of 105 AWC Trust members who earned the 2021 Well City Distinction. And it's quite a process that you have to go through throughout the year to make that happen. And it takes all of them to make it happen. And they did that. So thank you for creating a healthy workspace by completing and participating in the program. This is definitely beneficial, not only to the city, but to you as well. So, and I want to send out a special thanks to Amanda, who encouraged us to stay on task and sent out those emails on a regular basis. So thank you, Amanda. I did have, you know, before I go to Chief Wagner, I want to extend my congratulations to you again, Todd. Thank you for coming on board tonight and letting us share our appreciation for all that you have given and done. So thank you, Todd. And Chief Wagner, I can't remember, did you talk about a burn bag ban? Is Cedar Woolley going to be instituting a burn ban?
Cedar Woolley is always in the exact burn ban that the county is going to Friday. back, I think is almost 20 years ago, the Northwest Air Pollution, the city came into an agreement that we only allow recreational burns in the city, with this, which is seasoned firewood. So you can have your marshmallows and your hot dogs outside as long as they're in a masonry structure or a heavy gauge steel away from a building. And it doesn't become a nuisance to the neighbors as far as the heavy smoke and stuff. But the county is going to a full burn ban Friday at 2 p.m. So you won't be able to burn your leaves and your landscaping or any of that as well, where we can't really do that anyway. So it won't be any changes to the city, but all of our folks out and outside of the urban growth area will now be complying to what we're already doing because of the weather conditions.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And that is all I have. So at this point, we're going to move into public comments. It is 7:11. I'm going to open up public comment. Please state your name and your address, and we ask that you keep it to 3 minutes. So I see we do have one. Mr. Hart, is that you?
That's correct.
Yep. So
I'll go ahead. Yeah. Cody Hart, Prospect Street, Cedar Woolley, Washington. I did provide a letter that I'll be reading to the council and the mayor tonight in advance of this presentation. Very brief with some additional materials. So I'll go right into it. I am writing to notify you that beginning in early March, I began releasing findings of a statewide audit I was asked to conduct of the 2020 Washington State general election. It included significant evidence of irregularities and suspected crimes occurring in the November 2020 Skagit County general election, including positions in your city government. While my attached report dated March 21st and slideshow dated April 30th contained many details about the substance of my findings, I have also publicly released 4 video summaries with additional information and evidence that you can review on my website, codyhart.org, and on my YouTube channel at the link provided. Among the evidence I have disclosed, you will find I have exposed concerns that hundreds of ballots were created in Skagit County weeks after the close of the election by election officials, evidence of the deletion of months of video surveillance of the election officials handling ballots, evidence of statistically impossible ballot results by county election officials, and evidence that over 1,000 ballots were inexplicably picked up from an Anacortes drop box, even though those same voters, many from Cedar Woolley, have confirmed they dropped their ballot off in a different city's drop box, again, many in Cedar Woolley and not in Anacortes. Although the evidence and accusations of election fraud may seem astounding, to date, not a single official at the county, state, or federal level has disputed my findings, made a statement in opposition to my findings, and it is generally accepted that fraud did occur, bringing into question the validity of multiple elected officials at the local, state, and federal level. Furthermore, in an upcoming video release, I will provide additional evidence that over the last several months, investigations have been opened into officials at the highest levels of government, including many at agencies you have entrusted to oversee your and manage your elections for the city of Cedar Woolley residents. While I'm writing you to inform you of what has been found, I'm also writing to request your assistance, restoring the integrity of our election system by taking meaningful actions to address my findings, as well as by requesting official action by you as an elected official to correct what has been found and restore the public's faith in our democracy. Lastly, I'm writing to notify you I will be releasing a report to the public in October of what each agency and elected official in your city has done in support of the goal to restore election integrity to our state so the public can better understand your commitment to our American democracy and your effectiveness as a representative of the people you are in a position to represent. Thank you in advance for your assistance. Those of you on the council who are aware of me, the mayor who's aware of me, I don't know. I'm making sure that it doesn't go any further without all of you understanding. Every city in the county will be receiving a similar letter as this. I've been in coordination with law enforcement in 4 different counties, including federal law enforcement about this. And I've yet to see an elected official in the county I live take an action to even look into it.
So Mr. Hart, I hate to cut you off. It's been 4 minutes, so I'm going to cut you off. But we did receive your letter. We do have it, and it will be going out to the council. This actually came in after we started the council meeting, so I wasn't able to disseminate it, but we will certainly do that at your request. So thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Yep, thank you.
All right, is there anybody else who would like to participate in public comment? All right, hearing none, it is 7:16 and I'm going to close public comment and we will move on to new business as we have no old business. And it looks like Mr. Merriman, you are up first with the amendment to the 2021 budget. It's a first read, by the way. So no action is required tonight. Mr. Merriman?
All right. Thank you, Mayor and City Council. As the mayor just described, this is an amendment to our 2021 budget. We have about 13 different items. None of them are really large or anything unusual. We have two different things we accomplish with this type of ordinance. We have budget amendments and we have budget adjustments. Amendments is when we move money either from one fund to another, or if we have to increase the bottom line budget in any one particular fund, that's called an amendment. An adjustment would be if a department head or someone came to me and said, hey, I'm not gonna use all of my supplies budget this year, but I need some professional services money. As long as the bottom line in their budget doesn't change, we can do an adjustment to move line item to line item. What I like to do is, even though technically we only have to show the amendments on this ordinance, there's a schedule I attached, I like to show the adjustments as well. So City Council knows everything that's going on. We're not changing line items or things kind of in the back room. We put them right out there for everybody to see. So you'll find the ordinance and also a schedule I put together that lists columns that shows each of the amendments and the adjustment items. So we don't have to have any action on ordinance 1987-21 tonight. It's first read. So we'll bring this back the next council for your review and passage.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Doug at this time? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Doug. We will move on to our second new item of business, and that is the interlocal cooperative agreement. And Mr. Freiberger, this is yours.
Thank you, Mayor. I mentioned earlier tonight the receipt of the award of these funds. Basically, this is for the SR9 John Liner Road and McGarrigle Road intersection project, which is one of the vital elements of our Jones-John Liner Trail Road Corridor project. We had applied for $500,000 in grant funds from the Economic Development Board, and we were awarded $250,000. I've, in the memorandum that you have tonight, I have looked at the budget to see if that would provide us sufficient funds to move forward with the project. And again, what our plan is to use these funds to leverage a Transportation Improvement Board grant that will be due in the second week of August to fund the entire project. The entire project estimate, and this is based on our scoping study that was completed in January of 2020, is $2.492 million. The county funds would provide $250,000 for the construction phase only. We will be applying to TIB funds, assuming your approval tonight, to accompany our match funds of $374,000 to come up with the entire funding. So the ask from TIB would be a little over $1.8 million. That's roughly what we had applied for last year from TIB, assuming the same level of match when we did that in 2020, because we did not receive any funds from the Economic Development Board at that time. So we're ready to try again. The match funds will increase slightly from what we requested your approval for. when we were looking to apply for the ED funds. So they've gone up 50,000, and the total match funds would amount to a 15% match for the TIB. I have not yet talked to the executive director at TIB, but I'll be doing that later this week, just to feel them out on how this would look with that lower match from the ED funds. I still feel it should be a very strong application, and we were close to being funded last year. I understand the reason we didn't get funded was because of the COVID impacts on the state budget and the gasoline tax, which were down about 30% from their normal levels, and that is the primary funding for the TIB program. So anyway, our request for you tonight is to authorize the mayor to execute the interlocal agreement with Skagit County in the amount of $250,000 and to approve the revised commitment of $374,000 for local funding for a match for the project. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to cover those with you. Oh, and I should mention, working with Doug, we've plugged in the revised match dollars into what we call our arterial project listing spreadsheet, which we maintain covers all four of the funding sources we use for projects that are of the arterial transportation nature. It's a combination of our count 104 ending funds, our real estate excise tax funds, which we are allocating 50% of those for transportation improvements, our transportation benefit district fund 304, and our Growth Management Act impact fee funds that we collect from development to fund roadway improvements. So we run a spreadsheet, we plug the projects in, we've done it for a 3-year window just to make sure we can fund the projects that we're anticipating to do in the TIP. And that's the information we use as the background for these memos that we bring to you to request your authorization for funding. And I'm sure Doug would be glad to give you any information I neglected to bring up on that, but we're confident as staff that we have the funds in place to fund the entire application for the project that we'll submit to TIB in August. And this is, as I've mentioned, an important project, and we do recommend that we go forward with this. Thank you.
So if you have any questions regarding the funding, it's actually on page 53, and that will tell you which bank we're taking it out of and how much. So at this point, does anybody have any questions for Mark? He is looking for action tonight on this item.
I just want to verify this is Highway 20 and Highway 9, correct?
No, this is actually on Highway 9 at John Liner Road and McGarrigle Road. The Highway 20 and Highway 9 project is the one that I mentioned earlier. We have most of the funding for that, and I'll be coming to you in September to request your authorization to go to advertisement for that. But this is a separate project. This is the intersection at John Liner.
I just wanted to make sure I had the right project. It's like the Jones Road, John Liner Road, where you're going to put a light and stuff in there?
Yes, it's an intersection improvement that includes a new traffic signal, and we would have a minor right-of-way acquisition at all four corners of the intersection to allow for the turn radiuses. And the roadway would include dedicated left-hand turn lanes, similar to what we have on one of the intersections one of the legs at the SR20 and SR9 intersection, and which we will be adding with the project we're designing on that. So they'll be very similar intersections once it's all finished, and they will be linked together electronically so that they operate in tandem, which you want to do when signals are at that proximity.
Well, thank you. I'm sure I got the right project now.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? Any comments? Okay. Hearing none, Mr. Freiberger is looking for some action tonight. So do I hear a motion?
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I like to make a motion to authorize you, Madam Mayor Johnson, to sign the attached interlocal agreement between Skagit County and Cedar-Woolley.
All right, thank you. Do we have a second?
Madam Mayor, Councilman Owen, second.
All right, thank you. So we have a motion by Councilwoman Kesty and seconded by Councilman Owen to authorize me to sign the attached interlocal agreement between Skagit County and the City of Cedar-Woolley for the SR9 Township and John Line McGargyle Intersection Project in the amount of $250,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 For the record, just so you know, because this is also audio, I do need for you to verbally say it, not just hold up your hand. I'm sorry, Mr. DeYoung. I know that that's something that's you've been doing, but I need for you to actually verbalize it.
I'm sorry if that didn't clearly resonate. The mic was off and I did indicate aye. I'm sorry it didn't come through.
That's fine. Thank you. All those opposed, same sign. Okay. Motion carries. Just so I am clear, Mr. Freiberger, do you need an approval for the $374,000 in the interlocal match or not?
That would be yes on that, Mayor.
Okay, so we are looking for approval of a commitment of $374,000 in local funding from match for a Skagit County Economic Development Grant for, again, the SR9 Township and John Liner McGargyle Intersection Project.
Madam Mayor, this is Councilman Allen. I will make that motion.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, this is Councilmember Diamond. I will second that.
All right, thank you. So we have a motion by Councilman Allen and seconded by Councilwoman Diamond. All those in favor in the approval of the $374,000 match signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Okay. You choosing not to vote, Mr. DeYoung?
Madam Mayor, again, microphone was off and I did say aye. Thank you.
All right. All right, so motion carries. All right, thank you everyone. And it is 7:28. That is all we have for tonight. Unless there's anything for the good of the order, we are adjourned. Thank you everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.